Welcome to Close Quarters with me, Luciana Berger, and my very stressed and teched out, just had a nightmare partner in crime, Rebecca Simon.
I mean, literally, nothing makes you tips you over the edge like a technical default, and I have just spent half an hour trying to find Wi-Fi. Oh my god, I don't even know if I can talk about it without crying. Not that Wi-Fi should tip me over the edge, but it has. Anyway, I'm here.
And I know all the more stressful because you have micromanaged to a minute to make sure we had the time to be able to do this. And obviously we are now massively, massively overrunning. And all of us, in fact, you know, we often get asked questions like, how do we fit it all in? And we do have to kind of diarize this to the minute. So tech troubles, Virgin, thank you very much indeed, are not joyful.
I couldn't have put it better myself. I mean, that is the thing. When you're relying on all the technology to see you through and then it fails, it's like the basic infrastructure of your life. It's like putting the kids in a bath with no water. The same. It's just like a fundamental element has been taken away from you that essentially we've totally reliant on our lives in order to do, especially when we're recording remotely as we are, rather than in a studio. But anyway,
although my kids would actually like a bath without the water in it, so I'm going to try that one.
It's a good idea. I don't know if they're clean off the back, but try it.
Coming up on our podcast, we are so delighted and excited to have a really interesting chat with Michal. Michal not only is a mum to four kids, she is also a very, very high-flying HR exec. She was formerly at Facebook for 7 years and recently made the change and now works for TikTok in a very similarly high-flying and big role, international role, in fact. And she's going to be joining us to talk about the book she's managed to fit in that she's written over the course of the past year, which is about to be released. So it's really looking forward to hearing from her about her experience and what she's written about and why she's done that.
And it was actually great to speak to, wasn't it? I mean, like, I just love the fact that it's like, that's her job, that's her biography, and she's written a book, and it's just like amazing. How do you write a book with everything else going on? But we're going to hear all about that later, coming up very soon. But before we do, let's do our daily check-in. Luciana, we've already had a bit of an insight as to how I am, so I'm just going to take a moment to breathe and ask you, how are you?
I'm flying today. I am like on top of the world. I'm sorry to like be so joyful, but you know, last night I went out. I went out and had a meal.
Out.
At a restaurant. I went and I had, before we even started dinner, had not only a cocktail, but also a shot. I mean, it was very clear that we hadn't been out for a really long time, but it was me, my husband, and a very close family, like close friend of ours, the three of us. We went out and we ate in a pub, had a very lovely meal. In fact, actually, it was interesting because we haven't eaten out for so long that we had probably like around 2.5 courses, and like we're absolutely stuffed at the end of it because we just haven't eaten like that for so long.
What did you have a shot of?
I had a shot of Cafe Patron. It was just delicious.
I haven't had a shot of anything for ages.
Yeah, it was just like it was in celebration of the evening that we're about to have. We had a lovely meal and then we walked home. It was like a 4-4.5k walk, and it was nice to see the blossoms on the trees, and it was fresh, but it wasn't too hot and it wasn't too cold, and it just was just a lovely experience. So I am still bouncing off the walls having had that lovely first time experience after what probably has been about at least 5 months.
We are yin and yang today, is all I can say. So I'm very pleased that you've started this with a very upbeat. You're feeling on top of the world and flying, and hopefully everyone can take something from that. But I'm spent. My cuppeth runneth dry. So not only have I just had some tech issues, but I'm also off the back of a single mum weekend. And actually, all of the good things about coming out of lockdown and restrictions are yet to be keenly felt in my very small neck of the woods. Well, I mean, there might have been where my neighbours might be happily enjoying them, but I personally am not yet. And I'm scraping the barrel. I'm feeling so literally spent. Like, I don't even know if I've got any chat, which is really unhelpful when you're recording a podcast, but it is how I'm feeling right now.
And we're honest, you know, we're not looking to gloss it over. Like, you know, it feels like this is the first time for me in a long time for any of these chats where I've had anything like really kind of positive to reflect on. But if I remember correctly, Rebecca, is it tomorrow that your husband's got the big exam that he's been dedicating so many days and hours of his time to?
Yeah, that's right. So that happens tomorrow. It's 2 days. It's like a big, big exam. It's his finals up in his finals to be a consultant, I should say, for orthopedic surgery. So he's up in Glasgow for a couple of days, finishing, hopefully doing that, and hopefully doing a really good job. And like, we've got absolutely everything crossed that that should go well. And assuming it does go well, or even if it doesn't, there will be a momentary respite off the back of it where yes, it won't be quite as full on as it has been. There are some single mum weekends that I've got quite used to managing them. Like, he's a surgeon. He's often on call. He's often like not around. It's just the nature of the beast. And I've become like quite accomplished and adept at doing it. But I've just had a few in a row now. So it's kind of like a lot of the options I've got for the people that I draw upon and the resources that I kind of pull in to help me have got a little bit, even my most dearly loved ones are all a bit fed up of hanging out with me and my children just to kind of see us through the hours, which I mean I have a lot of sympathy for, because I'm fed up of hanging out with myself and my children as well. So
to be there, and hopefully obviously wishing Avi every success for those exams coming up. Please do pass on my good luck and best wishes and on your behalf, you know, I hope that it's a massive, massive positive outcome.
Thank you, Luciana. And actually, do you know what? It's not an unhelpful segue into what we're going to hear from now, because as Luciana said, we're going to be talking to her friend Michal. We had a fantastic chat with her. And one of the things that she spoke about is the preparedness or the willingness to accept that sometimes things don't always go according to plan. And you might kind of have successes one minute and failures the next, and just kind of accepting that for what they are and not always striving for perfection. So in the spirit of not in any way either striving for achieving or coming anything close to success, let's hear what Michal had to say to us. Hi, Michal. It's so nice to have you with us. How are you?
Good. I'm happy. It's a Friday. Shabbat is coming in a few hours. So yeah, it's a happy day. I love Fridays.
Michal, you know, we've just over a year through the pandemic. And it'd be, you know, great to hear from you about, you know, your experience, how it's been for you. I should say by way of introduction, you're a mum of four kids. You've changed jobs through the pandemic. You've gone from one super job to another super job. And you're also about to release a book. And I don't know the exact trajectory about when you started writing it, but certainly I know that you've been involved in it during this time. So, wow, so many different things. And we're so keen to hear what your experience has been and how you felt about it all.
Thank you. And thank you for having me here today, Rebecca and Sian. It's great to be here. And it's been, I mean, for all of us, it's been a very meaningful year or 14 months. And thank you for kind of asking me about my own personal experience. It's been ups and downs, but very personally, this year has been a meaningful year for me, because it's been a year of deciding to make some changes and also decided to take myself out of my own comfort zone. So this was the year when I did kind of decide and immediately take action to write a book, which was never my dream. You know, some authors were like born to be authors or always knew they wanted to be authors. That's not the story in my case. I was actually very kind of ready to do a PhD to write a paper about my experiences, but the professor said, you know, if you want people to hear your story, but writing a book is the most effective way. And immediately I said, no, I'm not English isn't my first language. I think in Hebrew. I still dream in Hebrew, and writing in English and just expressing my life experiences in English felt like a crazy, you know, just out of my comfort zone experience. But I think COVID, if anything, gave us different pushes in life. And I think it also pushed me kind of that reflection time to decide it's the right thing. So, I kind of was pregnant with a book during COVID, I guess. But at the same time, you know, it was a tough year. I was just telling my friend the other day that when I had COVID, I had to, self-isolate, and my daughter, which was then was 2 years old, she was scratching the door, not understanding why her mother was in another room for 10 days, closed and isolated. And I can still, sometimes when I go to sleep, I can still hear kind of her scratching on the door, kind of, you know, crying for me. And I think because we're all moving fast in life and, you know, COVID will stay with us. I wonder what of this experience will stay with her And as a mom, I can definitely say what, you know, I can still hear those kind of scratching noise. So COVID is, you know, in our system, but yet I think that so many of us have kind of taken step forward and kind of, you know, developed ourselves or did something meaningful this year. So it's a real mix.
It's amazing that you've taken such strength from obviously such difficult circumstances as well, and that people have dealt with it in different ways. And for some, it's just been a case of getting through every day. And not only have you got through every day, but you've also managed to be able to write a book. I mean, I'm just curious as to how did you practically like fit it in? I mean, I know that you've got a really high pressured, massive job, and you've obviously changed the job, and you've got four kids. Just like on a practical level, like how did you make it work?
I'm not going to lie. I work really, really hard. You know, I know it's not good, but I don't, at the moment, I don't sleep many hours. But I think that because it's a mission, because I do a lot of things for a purpose. So writing the book was, the purpose was to share a wisdom that I discovered, a wisdom that helped me overcome my mental health challenges, my issues with anxiety that I've been dealing from a very young age. Because I found something that was so precious and so meaningful and helped me navigate life, that gives me energy. You know, that gave me energy. And I think when you're doing something purposeful, then you just find, you also find the courage in yourself. I find courage to write. I found courage to change jobs. I found courage to break down for a couple of weeks and then kind of come back. And you know, and there's so many things that are imperfection. You should see my laundry room. You should see, if you ask my kids, they'll tell you that there were days when I didn't give them any attention. Actually, we had a call with one of the teachers of one of my kids that was at like a parents' meeting a couple of days ago. And she said, I'm not going to say my son's name, but, you know, he kind of really needed you on the, it was the second or third lockdown. I felt that he needed you more around. And, you know, she kind of gave me feedback. And I said, yeah, you're right. He did need me more around. And I guess I failed him. And you know, I failed some of my family members, but then I kind of course corrected. I guess that's, you know, if you want as a mom to do lots of things, you're gonna drop some balls. And I think I dropped some balls, but I also did some good things.
That is such a refreshingly honest answer or approach, isn't it? Because I think that we all feel this pressure to not be able to tick every box, but to tick every box really, really well. Like nothing has just gone hideously at, like, balls up and admit to I fail here and I fail there. And I actually think that it's really refreshing. It's really important to hear people say it. Like, yes, there are moments where it's just not all plain sailing. And there are times that things go well and things go badly. And there are moments where I think we all, if we're really honest about it, like I'm sure I fail my kids like all the time, because it's just the balance of trying to get stuff done, and we can't have it all. So we take the bits that we can have when we can have them, right? Just talking a bit more about your book, which is called What Would You Do If You Weren't Afraid? Having spoken to you now just for a few minutes, I feel like you've got the answer. It's a good question that you've posed. It's very clear what the book is going to be about, which I always think is helpful for those sorts of books. You want to know what you're going to get the answer to. What's the answer? What would we do if we weren't afraid? Well, what would you do? Well, you've written a book. Is that what you've done?
So my whole life I feared. So I was raised in Israel, and my first childhood memories are Holocaust memories through my grandparents. So my grandmother used to kind of wake up screaming, or not wake up in the night, kind of, you know, fear of the Nazis coming again. And she used to scream, "Don't take Michal." And it was like, this was my first childhood. These are the sounds that I remember from childhood. And my father was the head forensic pathologist of Israel, and I was exposed to things, to things that probably a child shouldn't be exposed to. But, you know, everyone has their family story, and this was mine. So fear was just a part of life. I feared death. I feared, you know, I really wanted to be a fantastic child and granddaughter. So I feared failing. You know, I only thought perfection was the only way, right? There was like no other way to roll. And I never wanted to disappoint. And that created a lot of anxiety. And for years, I tried to treat it with medication and therapy and just couldn't get rid of it until I made a discovery. And that's one of the reasons I wrote a book. I discovered a wisdom, the Jewish wisdom, that not many know of, because often when people hear about Judaism, they think about what people wear and what they eat and what they keep and what they don't. But actually, there is a wisdom, there is a psychology, like a Jewish psychology that I had no access to, even though I'm Jewish and Israeli, like I just never knew it was there. So I started discovering this wisdom when I was a very low place, when I almost gave up, when I say God gave up, it sounds dramatic, but when I was 38 and I thought, I will never feel joy, I will always worry, I will always be stressed, I'll never breathe. And at the same time, in a quite magical way, at the same time when I started discovering the Jewish wisdom, and which is universal, by the way, and I really want to, you know, kind of emphasize, this is a wisdom that you don't have to be religious. It's completely universal. At the same time, which was about 8 years ago, I started working for Facebook. And actually, what would you do if you weren't afraid is one of Facebook's mantras. So when you come to the office in the morning, or, you know, when you're in the office, you see posters saying, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And just beside those posters, you see other posters that say, fail harder. So what I actually learned is that I can actually completely rewire the way I was brought up. That actually asking myself, what would you do if you weren't afraid? Knowing that I might fail fail harder, as a way to grow as a human, as a professional, as a mother, I just discovered that I could actually look at my life in a completely new way. Now, it didn't happen in a moment, and it's not a trick or a tip, but I discovered that there's a way to live life with less fear. And that to get there, it means that you actually stop trying to cut things off yourself, not to try to cut anxiety or cut jealousy or cut the fear of, you know, all sorts of things, but just start to live with them in a different way. And I describe that with much detail in the book.
So forgive me, but when you explain to us, Michal, like, so how did you connect like what you saw on the wall at Facebook? How did you discover, and what did you discover? You know, what is that Jewish psychology? If you can kind of sum it up in just a few sentences, that might be a tall ask, but...
Listen, it's I can give you a couple of principles, for example. And when I say Jewish psychology, so even going kind of a level down, it's Hasidut, it's Hasidism. So it's kind of a way of living, it's an approach to life, and it's about living with joy. So the Jewish people have always dealt with challenge. You know, they've always kind of had to survive. And what actually what Hasidut says, or what the Torah gives as a guidance to life, is that struggle is a vehicle for growth. That actually struggle, we're wired to go through challenge. We shouldn't really look for that kind of, you know, fully peaceful, fully from the external world. We should find the ways to navigate struggle as a vehicle for growth. And also talks about believing in yourself. So for example, one of the principles in Judaism is about, you know, crossing bridges, or crossing your narrow bridge. And there's a very famous song in Hebrew, which is about the whole entire world is a very narrow bridge. And, you know, the most important thing is kind of to cross that bridge. So it's an idea of always taking the step forward. And as opposed to psychotherapy that often invited me to look back in a quite unblaming way about my childhood and my parents, what this Jewish wisdom showed me is that, yes, you could think about the past, but always look about that step that you take forward, for example, and really seeing setbacks as a way to grow. It also helps you put things in perspective. So one of the kind of, you know, Jewish narratives is about that each person should have two notes, a note in each pocket. And in one note, it says, the world was created for me. Obviously, originally is in Hebrew, but I'm translating it. So in one note, it says, the world was created for me. And then the other note says, I'm just a dust and ashes. And it doesn't mean that you're like dust and ashes in the sense of like you're nobody. But sometimes you are nothing. And sometimes you are everything. And in life, we have to learn how to navigate those. Sometimes I just need to say, I'm here, I'm awesome, I'm gonna nail it, I'm wonderful. And sometimes I'm just in the job of supporting someone, of allowing someone else to shine, of, you know, of being a golden kind of dust and ashes. And I think it just helps you navigate into those internal challenges that we always feel and give some practical tools.
Writing is so interesting listening to hear you speak for so many reasons. But just one thing is writing this book during COVID, which was a time where actually fear was actually quite a predominant feature for so many people's lives for a wide array of different reasons. Some people have genuine health anxiety, others were lonely, and that might have made them fearful because they were insecure, or people suddenly had their lives disrupted, and that comes with a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear. So did you find that there was something about the time period in which you were writing it, i.e. writing it during the pandemic, that provided a really helpful, in some ways, context on which to base some of these principles that you've been speaking about? I mean, it's just a very interesting dynamic where, you know, you could have written this book 3 years ago, everything you said would still apply, but the whole context would have been very, very different.
Absolutely. And I think this year has been, you know, a trigger for, well, all of us, I guess, and especially for people that suffer from anxiety. I think one of the things, you know, about COVID year or COVID period, so much research has already been kind of done, and I'm sure for, you know, years ahead. And I'm sorry, I don't have something like, you know, super, I guess, you know, brilliant or new to say. But what I can say that often trigger fear and anxiety are triggered by like a need for people to feel like they're in control. And, you know, I think I suffered from anxiety because I was trying to control all those things about, as I said, being perfect, never disappointing, always getting it right. So I think COVID, we felt like we were not in control in such a big way, in a meta way. And I guess the only things that we could control is our thoughts and how we respond to it. So for me, during COVID year, I was sitting down writing a book, sick with COVID, really, really sick. But in my head where I was going, but there's going to be this too shall pass. And I think also in Jewish wisdom, there's always this notion, this too shall pass. You are a chain of like thousands of years. And like this ring now feels really painful, but there will be rings to follow. And we just have to kind of hold hands together. Well, in COVID, don't hold hands, but just kind of keep things together and believe, you know, that it will pass. And you know, we're seeing these early signs now. It's heartbreaking to think about the people that we lost and the tragedies that we experienced, but we are continuing, which is, I guess, the human story.
And what does that return to normal look like for you? I mean, in terms of the changes we've experienced, and you know, what are you looking forward to? How do you think things will return to normal, or what do you think will stick because of COVID?
So I know, I guess, as much as, you know, as all of us read, I like being at home. So I'm not the one that booked 5 restaurants this week. I think, Luciana, you and I, you know, just going out for a walk is like a pleasant experience. I like being at home. I like being with my, you know, with my family. I should start looking maybe at my, like after myself a little bit better. But we're thinking about, you know, going back to workplaces and, you know, what is that going to look like? And as someone that cares deeply about diversity and inclusion, which is also something that I do in, you know, in my job, my head is thinking about how do we continue to build community and to build workplaces that people are feeling included regardless of where they are physically, as we go back to some version of life. And yeah, it's quite inspiring to see my friends in Israel dancing on tape, you know, just having a really good time, no masks. So I'm just looking at them and saying, you know, if this is what we have, well, I wish we had their weather. But yeah, people seem to be embracing life in a really beautiful way again.
Michal, it's been so interesting to have a chat with you today. And I'm really, really looking forward to the book coming out. What date should we be looking to? What's your release date in the UK?
What Would You Do If You Weren't Afraid is coming out in the beginning of May, and it's a very practical book with, you know, tools that anyone could decide to adopt and improve their life and at work and family and relationships, and hopefully it will bring some joy to people's lives and hearts.
Well, we're going to share a link for the pre-order of the book on the show notes, but on the point that you just made about joy, you obviously touched on your family. We'd love to, you know, we always ask our guests, you know, what has brought you joy in what has obviously been very difficult times, you know, and what are the things that have got you, seen you through, or what are the things you're looking forward to over the coming weeks as we still kind of emerge out of lockdown that are going to give you pleasure and happiness?
Well, joy is a word that I discovered only 7 years ago. So I'm just, even the word joy brings me joy. So I like kind of quite deep things. So what brought me joy is to be able to go full circle with my parents through the writing of the book and telling my, reminding myself of my family stories, but from a completely rewriting history, the way it's in my head. And really all that unfinished business is now finished, which gives me a huge amount of joy. What brings me joy is seeing my children, you know, grow up to be people that I'd like to say, you know, I'd like to be their friend. That gives me a huge amount of joy. And doing meaningful things in my community brings me joy. So yeah, a lot of happiness. My God,
that is such a much more substantive answer than a bottle of rosé,
which oh, is sorry. Kind of,
no, it's great, amazing. But like, that's where I was like thinking, I was like, oh, do you know, like gets to the end of middle of the night, she's finished a chapter. What's she gonna do? It's inspirational to be able to feel that throughout the past year.
Rebecca, I also have the glass of red, of course.
Oh, it's whiskey.
Like, you know, whiskey. I like whiskey. I like a red. But you know, I think that's one of the things I love about getting a bit older is that stuff. But you know, I mix the physical with the spiritual all the time. And that actually also brings me joy to be able to, you know, do a morning prayer and then jump on a meeting and then take my kids and then forget something. And then like that dynamism and every single day to say thank you that I'm alive, that huge amount of joy. So, yes.
Amazing. There's something we can all learn there, isn't there? Especially the point about getting older, which basically Luciana and I lament about and will continue to do so at great length.
Thank you so much, Michal. That was really, really wonderful.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Wow, so brilliant. So brilliant to hear from and speak to Michal and hear about her experiences. I'm really, really looking forward to her book coming out in just a few weeks' time. We're going to share the link with you. And what a title. What would you do if you weren't afraid?
I don't know what I would do now if I wasn't afraid. But I'm sure when I was younger, there were moments of anxiety and insecurities and my teenage years where I know how they impacted my behaviors and how far I pushed myself. And I think I kind of lived with quite a bit of kind of fear of like putting myself out there, putting my head above the parapet. Certainly when I was a teenager, I would say up until sort of my early 20s, which is when I kind of, I think, kind of crossed over a bit of a line. So what would I do now if I wasn't afraid? I don't know. I mean, I probably wouldn't write a book, to be honest. There is that thing that some people say, oh, everyone's got a book in them. I'm not convinced that I have a book in them, but I might put myself out there a bit more by, you know, writing more or just being a little bit more prepared to see what other people think. But I am aware that I'm like, even when we would do this podcast, like I'm like the sort of nervousness of, oh, what will people think when they hear it? And like just not having that kind of, do you know what? This is what I want to do. And we are doing it. So I'm saying like I've overcome my inbuilt insecurities and fears in that way. But I don't like really like to sail too close to the wind. I'm quite risk averse. Are you risk averse?
I don't think I am. And I've like really wrapped my brains. You know, when I knew about Michal's book title, I thought we might have this conversation about, you know, answering the question ourselves. Like, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And I just can't think of anything that I'm afraid of. And whether that, and it's not necessarily a good thing. Perhaps I was more reticent in my 20s or in my teens. But I think because of the job that I did for just under a decade, as a member of parliament, like it's so in the public eye, you know, yeah. you have to in it kind of any fears that you have. I mean, I certainly did have fears speaking publicly.
Do you remember the first time you stood up and made your maiden speech in the chamber? You must have been pretty, were you afraid then? Were you nervous?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely moments when I was nervous, and I had a physical manifestation of that. I had what I would affectionately refer to as the shaky leg syndrome. And actually the first time I remember speaking as a student, I think I was 19, at a conference of the National Union of Students, my leg shook so much from behind the podium that I got a really bad bruised knee because it hit the podium so much. I don't remember so much as the maiden speech, but I remember when I had to speak for the first time from the dispatch box, I had to stand on my foot because it was shaking so much. So certainly over the course of 10 years, I just had to confront that and deal with it. And the shaky leg is no more. So I don't have that problem. But that was a fear that I really obviously had to overcome. And it was, it was involuntary. It wasn't, I don't even know where it came from. But other than that,
it's quite interesting that physical manifestations of like anxieties or nervousness.
Yeah.
Like people have like things that they do. I'm actually sitting here now, like shaking my knee up and down, just like looking at my Wi-Fi.
Solidarity.
Both in solidarity of your dispatch box moment, but also because I'm just looking at my Wi-Fi bars. My biggest fear right now is that suddenly I'm going to get cut off.
I've jumped out of an aeroplane a few times. I think I didn't do bungee jump. Yeah, I've done a couple of skydives. A tandem one, so I didn't have to like go through the training. I didn't perhaps have the confidence that and it wasn't a fear, it's the commitment to go through the training to do a solo skydive is quite significant. So not that I'd rule it out if someone really pushed me to it, but I thought about bungee jumps, but I've also kind of prevented, well, I haven't kind of proceeded with that because I fractured some bones at the base of my spine when in my late teens, so that's why I didn't do that, rather than like an actual, it was informed by physical injury that meant that I didn't do it. So I just really can't think of anything that I have a fear of doing.
I'm conscious as we're talking about it as a topic that I have certainly been beset by fears of failure, fears of not achieving, fears of being laughed at, fears of not having kind of landed a point in the way that I wanted a point. Small things that I think have added up to it, not like particularly go-getterish kind of personality or character trait, but I would say that has definitely changed in my older years. I'm much more confident than I used to be. I'm much more assured. I kind of am much more tapped into my strengths and weaknesses. And I think that even for people who are afraid, even for people who are not afraid and who are very unfearful, I think that's terrific. But I think all people have strengths and weaknesses. And I think that if you are aware of those, you're much better at navigating potential fears, because you kind of know what is almost within your gift to navigate versus what kind of isn't, and what you kind of have to just take a step back and say, I can't do everything. Some things are not for me. Some balls have got to drop.
Yes. And obviously that speaks to what Bahar was talking about, was, you can't always have all the balls in the air. Like, say, sometimes some balls are going to drop and we have to accept the fact that sometimes we just can't do it all.
Absolutely. And I have really come to terms with that. And actually the pandemic has really made a lot of my balls just generally be rolling around on the floor. So I'm very aware of them, but they've often not been in the air at all. So I've had to really make my peace with low-hanging balls or floor balls rather than juggling act, because it's just been the nature of, it's been the nature of the beast. It's been the nature of how we've all had to adapt to life. And so I think that whilst I'm aware of things that I might have personally could have done better, I'm also aware that we should all be a bit kind to ourselves when measuring our success and failures or things that we've done well in the context of the sort of extreme circumstances that we've just lived through. And in some ways that we still are living through, because, things are opening up and they're becoming better. But, there are still frightful stories coming from other places in the world that make this still very, very real and present of mind. And I think that's just kind of, we should all be a bit kind to ourselves and accept our failures as learnings or things that we can move on from. And
I just actually passed on the way home this evening to get back for our conversation. There was a massive queue outside my GP surgery for like end of day any unused vaccinations. So there was like a kind of almost like a pen where they were holding people in the event that they had any spare vaccines, obviously had to be used up on the day. I had to drop something into the surgery, into the post box, and just had a chat with someone. There's, again, like for people, there's such a yearning to see life return to normal, or return to what people knew and had learned to expect and appreciate before this all happened. People very much, are seeing the vaccination as something to see that return. But in the absence of being able to have both vaccines, and there's still there's joys that we can celebrate as a being on the path to, but we are still, I think, a far cry from being back to a place that we knew and understood.
Agreed. And I also think that there'll be a lot of really important and helpful learnings from Michal's book around, you know, there will be some scars that are deeper and more serious that will take a while to overcome for different people for different reasons as a result of this. So the switch back to normal might not be manifest for everybody, even though there aren't any restrictions on our lives. People have lived through, as I said, like quite challenging times. So I think a kind of as a moment to bring out a book about overcoming fear, about finding resilience, and actually I haven't read it yet because it's not released yet. I think the release date is May the 6th, didn't she say? So
yes,
we'll pop that on the chat and you can all see it and get it for yourself. But I think that that's a really it's a really kind of pertinent time to have a book like that out, and hopefully a lot of people can get a lot of strength from that and start overcoming some of those fears and some things that might be holding them back as we hopefully move forward to a better a better year than the one we've just had.
Absolutely. And in the absence of that book, and obviously we look forward to it and we will share and promote that, but in the weeks before it's actually released, what's been seeing you through, Rebecca, over the course of the past 7 days?
So not a lot, to be honest, because I don't know how well I have seen through. I mean, obviously I'm here, so that's helpful. But
We're so pleased that you're here, Rebecca.
I have to say, like, I've got like I'm now in back to week two of Couch to 5K, and I've been for a couple of runs within week two, and I'm finding it very manageable, and that has been seeing me through, even though I've found it so difficult to find the time, and I literally have done, as I said last week, just literally squeezed it in when a meeting's been cancelled or something's suddenly emerged and there are no children around me and I've just left the house. And also I've added like a couple of good new songs to my playlist that I'm really enjoying, a couple of David Guetta ones that I hadn't had on there previously. There's a Tiësto version of the Pirates of the Caribbean, which I don't know if you know, but it's so good and it literally just makes me want to run. And there is that moment sometimes when the music touches you and it just kind of seems to go through directly into your feet, that powers you through, and it actually makes you feel like you are physically flying in a moment. And it's only at the moment for 90 seconds worth of running, so I don't want anyone to get too excited about it, but I do feel that I'm back on the right track with that. Started doing my Zumba again as well, so it's also kind of like bringing music and movement back into my life, which I haven't had time to do again for weeks and weeks, but I've just been doing it from home.
How do you do that? What, who do you do it with? How does it work?
So this amazing woman called Dancing with Louise, she's got like a whole operation and she does loads of things for kids classes as well and after school clubs. And I pre-pandemic I went to her classes live and I loved it and became very, very obsessed and into it. And I have her Zumba playlist on my phone and all that kind of thing. And then I've struggled at various points accessing it remotely, not accessing it, I mean obviously Wi-Fi, but it's not that, just because there have been certain times over the past year where I just have not, for whatever reason, been able to carve out the times and the slots that she's been doing, and I've dropped the ball on it a few times. And recently is one of those times. This last lockdown has been quite difficult, but in recent weeks I've picked it up again, and it makes me feel so much better. It makes me feel alive, just like a good dance is so therapeutic. I find Absolutely. It so therapeutic.
So I have to come on this podcast and admit that I still have not initiated or started Couch to 5K, which I am embarrassed and mortified about. But just in all honesty, this past week has been like extreme in terms of work. You know, normally I like to chat about the hour of TV that has kind of been my go-to relax at the end of each day. I haven't even watched any TV this week. Because I've been so busy with work, and obviously, you know, we all have peaks and troughs with our work. Mine's pretty full on. In part, it's because I've gone back into the office for 2 days, and which is great to see people and great to be around. But I now have like a door to door, almost 2 hour commute every day, and that's 2 hours of like work time that I can do a bit on the tube, but it's not the same. So, you know, I'm so used to doing those extra hours in my day from home that I've now got to kind of recalibrate.
But how has it been to be back?
It's been good. I mean, so it turns out like for our office, like the kind of peak attendance is on a Thursday. I haven't been in on a Thursday yet, so it's been nice to see people, but not seeing the kind of the volumes of people that happen to be going in on a Thursday. But just nice to be out. Nice. It's so much healthier for me, certainly, to be having that commute, like doing, you know, a few extra thousand steps a day by way of, you know, walking to the tube and coming into the office, going out for lunch, like walking to go get lunch, etc. Yeah.
Someone else making your lunch. Amazing.
Not being glued to like my kitchen table and, you know, having a loo break and maybe getting outside, but not really. So yeah, it's like definitely healthier, I think, to have that interaction. And so nice to meet some of my colleagues. It's still, you know, I started my current job in lockdown and there's still a number of the people that I work with that I've only seen through a screen. So increasingly those numbers
weird,
are reducing.
Isn't it? Yeah. So weird that.
But the thing that has got me through in the absence of being able to turn to anything else is that it's actually another podcast that I love listening to every day. And it's the FT Daily Podcast. And it's only around...
I listen to the FT Daily Briefing. It's great.
Oh, I absolutely love it. So it's only like 10 minutes a day. But over the course of my commute, it's just something that I feel like I always learn something. It's always interesting. There's always bits that are kind of relevant to my job, but other bits that I don't know about. It's got a real international perspective. So, you know, I'm very on top of like domestic politics and what's happening like day to day in Westminster. But this just gives me a perspective and insight into things that I perhaps I wouldn't see or know about otherwise. So I feel like I learn.
What's quite good about it is that it's short, right? So it's kind of, if you don't have time to read the papers or read, you know, three different news outlets and you only got time for one, it's like as you say, kind of gives a different alternate international view of what's going on in the world, which if you are a news junkie and like current events, current affairs, which both of us do, I listen to it daily. No, I don't do a commute yet because my office is still shut, but I do try and do a walk to the station and back, which I think I've mentioned before, just to make myself feel like I'm getting a basic amount of steps in. And I often listen to that and it's like a perfect 10 minute.
It used to be my partner on the walk when I used to get the kids from nursery where I used to live. So I don't think we discussed this, but I've lived in three different homes over the course of the past year, which has also added some challenges to my plate. And that was always like exactly the right amount of time for that walking journey. So I really missed that bit of where we used to live. So yeah, really just trying to reincorporate this, be able to listen to that as well, because I listen to my other daily briefing for anyone that's into politics, the London Playbook by Politico that comes out around 10 past 7 every morning, and that plays in my shower of a morning to make sure that I'm up to speed and up to date with everything going on in Westminster and Whitehall. But yeah, this one I seem to get kind of additional insight and pleasure from because it's so different.
That sounds like a nice thing to leave people with. And listen, look, maybe you'll rethink whether Couch to 5K is the thing that you have to make a commitment to do it. Maybe it won't be that. Maybe it'll be something else that either fits into your life better or kind of feels more doable or more enjoyable, maybe.
Well, it was certainly my intention. You know, obviously this week, but the week work-wise has been totally full on and that can happen. It was certainly my intention this weekend to just try and fit it in. But at the end of the day, I basically prioritize my kids. Wow. They've now got all these invitations to actually see some of their little friends in person, albeit in gardens, but still having a play date, which, you know, for my just 2-year-old, he hasn't had a play date. So I feel like that has to be my priority at this moment in time. And my waistline.
Well, I think that is a good prioritization. That is a good judgment.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you so much for joining us. As ever, it's been a pleasure. This has been the Close Quarters podcast with me, Luciana, and
me, Rebecca, who's managed to stay online the whole time.
Brilliant. Do follow us on social media. Great to hear your comments. Great to receive your direct messages, whether that's on Instagram at the Close Quarters podcast, on Twitter at Close Podcast. You can message us and you can rate us too. And we love hearing your feedback.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.